All right, listeners, welcome back to episode 39 of Sustainability Defined, where Scott and I are here defining sustainability one topic and one bad joke at a time. Today's episode, Scott, is on energy efficiency. How do we feel about that?
I think it's efficient, and everyone that knows me knows that I love efficiency, so that's good.
If we can deliver this efficient episode energetically, I think we will come out on top.
Yeah, enthusiasm plus efficiency equals good. So before we get started, Jay and I want to note that this episode is sponsored by Ingersoll Rand. They're a world leader in creating comfortable, sustainable, and efficient environments. And Jay and I, we're as selective as ever with the topics we choose for each episode. And we believe that this company is making legitimate progress in the push towards an energy-efficient future. With that, Jay, let's get into the outline and into this thing.
Let's get cracking. So number one, we will ask, what is energy efficiency? Number two, we'll ask, why is it important to talk about energy and energy efficiency? Three, what are some energy efficiency practices in buildings and in the transportation sector? Number four, what can listeners do to make their homes more energy efficient? Number five, key issues surrounding energy efficiency. Then number six, we'll talk about which states and countries are leading the way on energy efficiency. And then number seven, we'll touch on Ingersoll Rand's energy efficiency leadership before segueing into our interview with Scott, too.
He literally numbered those out. People are going to be like, oh, seven things. You know, we'll get through it. It's going to be cool.
As we're putting these notes together, I'm like, you know, I think we're going to lose some people if we just go then and then branch into and then yada, yada, yada. So let's number and see how we do.
So people like the numbers. You should have done it in Spanish, though. Anyway. So what is energy efficiency? I think that's a good number one to start. And let's start off with the difference between energy conservation and energy efficiency, because it can get a little confusing. So energy efficiency, energy conservation, not the same thing. They do have a similar goal, though, which is to reduce energy use. So here's the difference. Energy conservation relies on people cutting back on activities that consume energy. Think like turning off lights, driving less, using appliances less often. Energy efficiency harnesses technology to help avoid or reduce energy use so that you can still turn on the lights, drive, wash your clothes, but use less energy in actually doing so. So not stopping doing them, but doing them more efficiently. And it really all comes down to that smarter energy use.
That's right. So in other words, energy efficiency aims to decrease energy usage without really changing our energy use habits and patterns. Not that we shouldn't anyways, of course. But Scott, let's talk about why it's important to talk about this topic of energy efficiency. So today, the United States' 114 million households and more than 4.7 million commercial buildings account for 41% of total U.S. energy usage. That means these buildings consume more energy than the transportation sector, 29%, and the industrial sectors, 30%.
It's a lot. Okay. Most of this building energy use and the associated carbon emissions, they come from heating, cooling, and lighting, and powering appliances and electrical equipment. That's why we gave the examples we gave earlier. And smarter energy use is also one of the world's most powerful weapons for combating climate change and ensuring our air is safe to breathe.
So, Scott, there are many other benefits to energy efficiency besides reducing carbon emissions. So
how could I forget?
Come on, Scott, let's run down. Number one is jobs. Energy efficiency already accounts for more than 2 million U.S. jobs, 10 times more than oil and gas drilling and 30 times more than coal mining. In fact, about one in every six construction jobs in the country is connected to energy efficiency. Scaling up America's energy efficiency efforts will create tens of thousands of additional well-paying jobs.
And this is the kind of stats that people cite when they're talking about the Green New Deal and things like that you're seeing in the news.
So exactly.
Could be another whole episode, I think, on that. But in addition to jobs, number two is money. So investing in energy efficiency makes financial sense. Let's first talk about Jay's favorite thing, commercial buildings. Upfront investment in green buildings can mean major savings on energy. LEED certified buildings in the United States are estimated to have saved $1.2 billion in energy saving. Retrofits of existing buildings can also make a lot of financial sense, considering commercial buildings waste up to 30% of the energy they consume.
Okay, so that's the commercial stuff, the stuff I love, Scott. Now for...
You're so commercial, Jay. Oh, God. My God.
So now for individual households, with the stuff we see every day. By investing in energy-efficient appliances, a U.S. household can save up to $500 a year on utility bills.
Right, but that is one of those stats that people throw around, but it's important to keep in mind that how much you actually save with energy-efficient appliances depends on several factors. So one is the cost of energy in your area. This varies across the country and the world. Another is the amount of use of the appliance. Consider washers. 45% of U.S. households do laundry between 2 and 4 times every week. 10% of us are running 10 and 15 loads. One study found that a household's bottom line for paying $200 more for an energy-efficient washer ranged from a $100 loss to saving $1,560. So really, I mean, if you wash your clothes a lot and you're paying all that energy and then it becomes way more efficient, you're going to save a bunch. But if you only wash it a couple times and you put all this investment into a new washer, you might actually lose money. So,
Scott, who's against saving money, you know, which is number two. But let's move us to number three.
And why are you washing your clothes like twice? How many clothes do you have?
I'm a dirty man, Scott.
And who's washing it 15 times a week? What is this?
All right, beyond our hygiene habits, number three, as far as the benefits of energy efficiency, is, of course, the environment. So
Heard of it.
So just in the U.S., widespread use of efficient appliances, electronics, equipment, and lighting, along with better insulation and other types of weatherization, could cut 550 million metric tons of carbon pollution per year by 2050. That's equal to the electric power emissions produced by the states of Texas, New York, Florida, Illinois, Virginia, and California just in 2016.
Nice. So nice. What are some energy efficiency practices in buildings, transportation, and factories? How does this actually look on the ground? So an easy place to start is with, you guessed it, buildings. So here are some common energy efficiency practices done with our building stock, both new and old.
All right, so number one is thermal insulation. So most heat, up to half of the total amount of heat actually, is lost through the walls of an uninsulated house. So wall insulation can reduce this loss by 2/3, which is really substantial. And insulating windows and doors on top of that is another way to increase thermal retention.
It's crazy to think about. That would just be so frustrating to have your heat lose so much of it. You'd be like, oh, I've turned up the heat so much. Why is it not getting hot?
Well, and think of those thermal maps, you know, where it's so clear to see where all of the heat that you're paying for is just slipping right out of your house. So you insulate that, you stay warmer, save money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You should just keep your hands on the holes. You know, just keep it in. I'm just imagining people like, oh no, putting their hands every all the different holes.
The heat's getting out.
Yeah. All right, so reflective roofs. A reflective roof is one that has been designed to reflect more sunlight and absorb less heat than a standard roof. When buildings absorb less heat, it takes less energy to cool them. Makes sense.
It does. All right, so one more common energy efficiency practice for buildings, building automation and smart meters, kind of like a really exciting space in the real estate field. So by continuously monitoring energy usage, smart meters are able to track and then automate a building's energy usage to open up new opportunities for energy savings. One example comes from Trane, which is one of Ingersoll Rand's four main brands. Trane's tracer building controls provide data-driven dashboards of a building's equipment and systems, so then users can measure performance and identify areas to lower their operating costs. Cool stuff.
Yeah. All right. So we just talked commercial buildings. Now let's move into the transportation sector, which is also ripe with opportunities to increase energy efficiency. One of those ways is aerodynamic design and weight reduction. So as it turns out, heavy vehicles lose a tremendous amount of energy from wind resistance, braking, and rolling resistance. Improvements in materials, aerodynamic design, and drivetrain, think engine/transmission efficiency, have the potential to substantially increase the average fuel economy of the U.S. vehicle fleet.
So on top of that, as far as the transportation sector goes, is power optimization. So here's a cool one. Solar panels for transport trucks. Thermo King, another one of Ingersoll Rand's brands, produces solar panels for the top of your truck that are proven to reduce diesel auxiliary power unit runtime by 20 to 30% and extend battery life to 5 or more years.
Gotta get me one of those, Jay.
On top of that massive truck you drive, Scott.
Yeah, right. All okay. Right.
So, Scott, talk to us about what listeners themselves can do to make their homes more energy efficient.
All right, so one is energy conservation. Be smart about the energy you're currently using. Start small, turn off electronics that you're not using, tweak your TV setting, adjust temperature settings, set timers, hunt down what are called energy vampires. These are things that consume electricity even when idle. One study found that the average household has 65 devices plugged into or permanently connected to U.S. homes. This always-on energy use by inactive devices translates to approximately $19 billion a year, about $165 per U.S. household, and 50 large power plants worth of electricity. So this energy vampire stuff is huge. I remember I actually went around one time. There's like a thing you can plug in your appliances to, and it'll tell you how much energy it's using when off. Yeah. You can like find it on Amazon, yeah.
Well, it's something you don't think about, because like you think that as soon as you're done using, then no. Obviously it's done, but that's not.
Like cable box, when it's off, no. Still using a ton of energy.
Yeah, plugging your phone in for too long, that's still pulling juice. All right, so still on the listener level here, in their homes, number two is energy efficiency. So listeners can buy efficient home appliances.
So heating and cooling efficiency, another thing, if just 1 in 10 households bought Energy Star labeled heating and cooling equipment, we'd avoid pumping 13 billion pounds of greenhouse gas emissions into the environment each year, equivalent to the annual tailpipe emissions of 1.2 million cars.
And of course, listeners can switch to LED bulbs. So brightening rooms with efficient LED bulbs can save households about $100 a year, adding up to national savings of around $12.5 billion if these LEDs were universally adopted. Okay, Scott, so we've gone through some examples of how listeners can adopt energy-efficient practices, but let's talk about some key challenges to this whole topic of energy efficiency.
Right. It sounds like a duh, but why is this not happening?
Right.
And on a bigger scale.
You know, no one said making our world energy efficient would be easy, to be fair. So the Electricity Journal spotlighted 5 chief challenges to widespread energy efficiency. Scott, you want to walk us through them?
Sure. So one is the magnitude of energy efficiency savings must increase dramatically. The second is the sources of energy efficiency savings have to diversify. So we talked about some, but it could be more. Third is measuring and ensuring the persistence of energy efficiency savings must become commonplace. Fourth, energy efficiency outcomes must be integrated with a carbon reduction framework so people can see the connection to reducing carbon and combating climate change. Fifth, energy efficiency must be understood and valued as part of an evolving grid with utility-scale renewables, distributed energy resources, and significant load variability.
Right. So it's nice to keep some of that high-level stuff in context because we really, really need to ramp up our energy efficiency measures to make the impact I know we all want to have. So let's dive then into some examples of how cities, states, and countries are leading the way on energy efficiency. We do know that 27 states in the U.S. have adopted an Energy Efficient Resource Standard, or EERS. An EERS uses either financial incentives or non-performance penalties to encourage energy efficiency and reduce electricity sales. So states with an EERS have shown average energy efficiency spending and savings levels more than 3 times as high as those in states without such programs.
And New York has shown leadership in this area. In December 2018, it announced a new energy efficiency target for investor-owned utilities. It will more than double utility energy efficiency progress by 2025, reducing the state's energy consumption by the equivalent of fueling and powering 1.8 million homes.
Vermont and, of course, Scott, California are leading with a comprehensive suite of state-level energy efficiency standards for high energy use products like faucets, toilets, computer monitors, and air purifiers. We know we love our pure air.
We do, and those states are like mandating those, which is cool. Well, I don't want to say it's cool, but I don't know. It's their choice. So on a country level, the 2018 International Energy Efficiency Scorecard examines the energy efficiency policies and performance of the world's top 25 energy-consuming countries. Can you guess the top 5 countries? Well, they are, give you a minute to think about it, but they are Italy, Germany, France, UK, and Japan squeaked in there at 5, U.S. 11th, below China.
As is usual, Scott, over the past few years, we have some improvement to do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move now into Ingersoll Rand's leadership on energy efficiency. So you, dear listener, if you haven't heard of Ingersoll Rand, no worries. It's one of those huge companies that the typical person engages with often, but doesn't even realize it. So with a history dating back to 1871, Ingersoll Rand and its family of brands help heat, cool, and automate buildings and transportation across a variety of different industries all across the globe. So you've most likely heard of a few of its four primary brands. Scott, what might those be?
Okay, well, the first is Trane, T-R-A-N-E. It creates comfortable, sustainable, and energy-efficient environments while improving the performance of homes and buildings around the world. This includes air conditioners or furnaces for your home, or HVAC systems for large commercial buildings like hospitals and schools.
The second brand is actually named Ingersoll Rand, which itself, how meta is that? The specific Ingersoll Rand brand provides products, services, and solutions that enhance customers' energy efficiency, productivity, and operations. This includes products like power tools and air compressor systems.
Okay, the third is Thermo King, like Burger King, but I guess, I don't know, Thermo.
Equally as tasty.
Yeah. So it enhances quality of life through transportation temperature control systems and dealer networks that deliver assurance of freshness, performance, and partnership. So as an example, Thermo King helps provide refrigeration systems for trucks and vans that deliver food or medical supplies.
Lastly, we have Club Car, which is my favorite one of the four. Club Car is one of the most respected names in the golf industry. It's the world's largest manufacturer of small wheel, zero emissions electric vehicles. These are also my dream vehicle. If I could have a golf cart to get around every day, I would be thrilled.
Well, when's your birthday?
We just missed it. It's in October, so we can start saving now.
Okay.
Appreciate that, Scott. On top of publishing a range of reports on its climate commitments, sustainability reports, materiality assessments, and governance strategies, Ingersoll Rand also created the Center for Energy Efficiency and Sustainability, abbreviated to CEES. This center facilitates the company's sustainability-related work with government and non-governmental organizations, universities, and technology and industry leaders. We'll be speaking with Scott Tu, the executive director of CEES, coming right up.
And as a testament to all of Ingersoll Rand's work around sustainability, it actually won the Best Environmental Stewardship Award from where I work, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation Corporate Citizenship Center.
Love it.
And right? And it won for reducing its greenhouse gas emissions by 35%, 2 years ahead of its 2020 goal. And it achieved this by focusing on four areas: energy reduction, optimization of refrigerant charging, upgrading its fleet to improve gas mileage, and renewable energy.
Yeah, Scott, I think it's really awesome that we're speaking with a company that you have very recently awarded such a cool award.
Yeah, at our Corporate Citizenship Awards, which is like the Oscars of corporate citizenship.
Oh, man.
There's like an MC and everything.
You must look so sharp in a bow tie, Scott.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever worn a bow tie in my life.
I'm still just envisioning you on the red carpet of this event.
Do you know how to tie one?
No, but my dad's quite good at it.
Okay.
So
he can teach both of us.
Yeah. All right, Scott, let's talk about our other Scott coming up real quick. Scott Tu of Ingersoll Rand. Scott leads company-wide efforts to engage employees and sets processes and policies to reduce the resource demand of current and future company products.
He also helps lead the company's communications and advocacy strategy related to sustainable business practices. He serves as an internal and external thought leader in the space of sustainability, connecting leaders and strategic brands from a variety of areas, including media outlets, government agencies, NGO partners, etc.
Let's see what Scott's got to say. All right, listeners, joining us now is Scott Tu, who is the founder and executive director for the Center for Energy Efficiency and Sustainability at Ingersoll Rand. So, Scott, thank you so much for joining us. Before we get started, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your background and how you got interested in sustainability and energy efficiency?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to join the program today. Happy to talk about my background. I don't know where to start other than I've been working in the environmental issues area for all of my career, 20 plus years. I started out with an interest in ecology and the impacts of toxins in ecosystems that moved over to work in environmental issues and environmental policy. And then for the last 8 years, I have been working in the broader field of sustainability for Ingersoll Rand.
And what was there one turning point for you where you came across the concept? You know, what got you, do you spend time outdoors as a kid? What got you first interested in this?
Was it this podcast, maybe?
Yeah.
No.
No. I guess my interest goes all the way back to childhood. I was raised on a family farm. Seven generations before me were all farmers. I'm the first one that fully broke away, but my wife would tell you I still haven't broken away. Although I live in suburbia now, I still have a backyard raised beds, and I produce everything from raspberries to persimmons. Mm. So the my hands in the dirt is still the best way for me to unwind.
Are you making pies, or what are you doing with that?
Yeah, I make pies, of course. Pies, cobblers, jellies, jams. I pickle some of the veggies. So,
oh, my gosh. We should have done this interview.
We needed
to
do this in person.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's same page.
Yeah. This life growing up around produce, pretty different than what you're doing with Ingersoll Rand. And we went over some of the basics about Ingersoll Rand and its four major brands and the introduction. So to us, it's one of those huge companies that the typical person engages with often but doesn't know about necessarily. So beyond the basics, what should listeners know about Ingersoll Rand before we jump into energy efficiency?
You know, beyond the basics, I think some of it is that it's one of those companies that touches your life in ways that you might not realize. Comfort, for instance, how we enjoy comfort, whether it's air conditioning or heating, we deliver that for one out of two buildings. Hmm. Things like fresh food that you enjoy, that you pick up at your local grocery store, that is going to be typically brought to you by an Ingersoll Rand brand. That brand specifically is called Thermo King. It's the largest transport refrigeration company in the world. And so if fresh vegetables and fruit arrive near your door, it's a very good chance that Thermo King brand delivered those to you. And, you know, I would say that the last piece that I would mention are things that are a bit unknown to most of the public. We own still America's largest electric vehicle company. It happens to be an off-road vehicle brand called Club Car. If you're a golfer, you know it from golfing. You see it on golf courses. But
so, like, it's the largest with, like, the number of vehicles sold?
Correct. Okay. That's right. And but now the big growth there has been other areas that you would encounter in the Club Car brand, places like athletic stadiums, college campuses, retirement villages, places where you need short distance commuting, and electric is a lot less impactful to the environment than other options. So, you know, as I said, you encounter a lot of our brands in a variety of ways. It could be in the fresh food that you eat or the comfort that you enjoy in your home.
Scott, before we dial in a little bit further into what you're doing at Ingersoll Rand, we know that sustainability efforts like energy efficiency and reducing greenhouse gas emissions are core to all of Ingersoll Rand. So could you explain how Ingersoll Rand is tackling climate change across the organization and really why it's so important to you?
Well, we can talk about climate change and energy or energy efficiency, and I think they're very much connected because using energy and the use of energy is either a direct or indirect contributor to climate impacts. And so I always think of them with direct connections. And the company also thinks of it that way. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, comfort, if you think about our comfort systems, our air conditioning and heating systems that you may find in your home or you may find in the building, your office, wherever you work or worship, you're going to encounter comfort systems. And a little known fact is that the comfort systems in a building typically are responsible for about 40% of the energy use of that building. It's by far the largest area of energy use. And we happen to be the company that provides those comfort systems. And so, you know, we think of two things. We think of doing our part to help customers save money means that we need to focus and innovate on energy to make them the most efficient systems that they can be. We'd like to get that 40% down to something much lower. On the flip side of that, as a company, we think about it in terms of every bit of efficiency that we can develop, redesign, innovate in future solutions will also have a very favorable, a positive impact on climate change because, you know, to run those systems, it requires local energy production to be fired up, whether it's coal-fired or renewable, and more of that needs to be consumed unless we can make the systems themselves more efficient. So there's a direct connection, And we're working on both sides of that every day.
So this Center for Energy Efficiency and Sustainability that you all launched in 2010, was it with the idea that we'll discover these opportunities? So why did you launch the center? And did you had energy efficiency in the name from the beginning? It's kind of a unique thing to have in there.
Yeah, that's right. I think that was a nod towards the thread that goes across all of our solutions is about efficiency. That's the thread. It's around energy and more efficient solutions going forward. So that's the thread. And then sustainability sort of is underpinning. Sustainability is always about finding efficiencies and or productivity. And it's always about the opportunities as well, the untapped opportunities. And so the way we've gone about doing that as a company to have this center of excellence that we call the Center for Energy Efficiency and Sustainability that has a dedicated group. And our group, though, is really tasked with finding those opportunities and helping businesses and the product leaders begin to innovate and deliver those to the market. It's also about integrating it in how we engage our employees, engage our customers, engage universities and think tanks around new concepts that may not have been uncovered or understood before. So we want to add our voice there.
So I think that's a perfect segue, Scott, into one of the center's four focus areas, which is innovation and product stewardship. So can you give us an example where you worked with a customer to develop some super innovative approach to either make them or the products of yours that they were using more energy efficient?
Yeah, it's a great question around customer-related solutions. It's an exciting time. I could give a lot of examples. One of my favorite examples right now, though, is we're working with a large movie chain, a movie theater chain, and we have been able to deliver some significant efficiencies, but it's not been related directly with our products. It's been related to the use of new intelligence and data, and here's how we do it. We have connected the movie theater chain's online payment system. So if you go out and you buy a movie ticket online, and wherever you buy your movie tickets, and you buy your ticket for the 4 o'clock movie at your local theater in your zip code, we have been able to connect that with that customer and their online ticket purchases to predict how much cooling and heating and humidity control is needed in the theater that you'll be sitting in at 4 o'clock today. And so we're able to adjust the HVAC systems, the comfort systems, precisely at the time needed to anticipate and be ready for the crowd that will be in theater number 12 at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Oh, because it varies by the number of people, not necessarily the weather outside.
No, it's both. Obviously. So we're able to do both. We're able to use weather-related insights. We're able to use the number of tickets that they sold for that showing at 4 o'clock. And we've been able to link that to the building management system, sort of the control system for the HVAC system. And all of that adjusts now in real time automatically using artificial intelligence and data analytics. And the savings for the movie chain nationwide have been significant, not only on the dollar side, but just in terms of true energy consumption has been reduced overall. They're happy, we're happy, and it's more than just thinking about how to make products more efficient. It takes things to a whole new level, and the possibilities, there's still great possibilities that are untapped.
Huh. Can you make it colder during scary movies to really add to the effect?
Yeah. Just an extra push of air conditioner make it warmer. Air. Scare people. Well, that's very cool. Okay, so another focus area you all have is issues and advocacy. And we're wondering, is there some policy that Ingersoll Rand is pushing particularly hard, be it at the local, the state, or federal level, that it thinks is critical to advancing energy efficiency?
Yeah, there's one that I have to mention. It's the one that has been most in our mind that we've worked hardest on over the last couple of years. I don't know if your listeners have heard of Paul Hawken wrote a book a couple of years ago called Project Drawdown.
Yeah, we spoke with him actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excellent. Well, if you spoke to Paul Hawken, then you're aware that Project Drawdown listed 100 ways that we could work to meet the necessary temperature change that was needed to keep us away from perilous times related to climate. And the number one way according to Project Drawdown, was to change how we use refrigerants. Refrigerants are greenhouse gases that are used in devices like cooling, like air conditioners. It's what delivers the cooling to your home. However, they are greenhouse gases. And so we have been investing heavily, hundreds of millions of dollars, to research with the best thinkers out there, institutions, universities, research groups, national labs, to try and find the least impactful, best next refrigerant. And what we're looking for is a solution that does not force us all to make big trade-offs. Like, we don't think we should be making trade-offs that would increase toxicity or increase safety or reduce quality or reduce efficiency. We don't want to go the wrong direction. We want a solution that actually has no trade-offs. We believe it exists. We actually have been testing and piloting in several countries next-generation refrigerants that are markedly, that are orders of magnitudes better than today's refrigerants. We think we're very close to some exciting news in that space. And so the policy, on the policy side of that, we've been doing two things. One is that the use of refrigerants is regulated by federal, state, and national codes and standards. We've been working in that space progressively, trying to make sure that when we do get this new one in the system and it works, we need to be able to sell it. And then secondly, we've been working on policies like Kigali. Some of your listeners may have heard of Kigali. It's mm-hmm. it's the Montreal Protocol Amendment that forces or that helps countries understand how they will transition to new refrigerants, those that are much more climate friendly. And so we've been one of the companies out in front of that to help countries, policymakers understand that this is a good thing. It creates jobs. It's about the future. I mean, I think next generation is a term that I like, and next generation not only is about the future, but it's also about the possibilities. And so we've worked really hard for the last few years with policymakers on this transition and the possibilities there.
Yeah, we actually covered HFC, what was that, Jay, episode 2? So if listeners didn't listen to that one or Project Drawdown, those are in the archives.
That's great.
And so this substitute, how do you go about finding it? Is it like a new, like, what are you testing? Different types of gases or chemicals? And then you have proprietary, like, will it be only yours to sell, or how will that work?
Yeah, we work with a lot of suppliers and partners. There are some incumbent suppliers like the Honeywells, the Chemours, sort of companies that have been providing refrigerants for years. We're working with them on, what if we blended this with your existing gases? What happens if we put those in the system? Do we get these trade-offs? Does it still work? Does the solution get delivered? And then we're working with the sort of startups, companies and small startups that have ideas for how we remix, rethink delivering the solution. I think rethinking comfort is a piece of this, but obviously also rethinking how we blend it, who we work with, all those things have been on the table. So it's been an exciting 2 or 3 years in this space.
Well, Scott, I'd like to follow up on that point, because in hearing you describe that, you're clearly working with a number of external partners on these kinds of initiatives. So I'm wondering how collaborating with external partners allows you to make additional progress on energy efficiency, maybe even over and above what you might be able to do on your own.
Yeah, that's a great question. Partners are really important to us. I mean, I mentioned some suppliers. I think everyone understands what that means. But we have so many other areas we've been working with partners. A couple of examples would be World Wildlife Fund has helped us significantly around helping thought leaders and policymakers understand that our company is still committed to the Paris Accord and to the principles of the Paris Accord, which are to increase efficiencies, reduce climate impact. We don't plan to slow down. We think that those principles are sound principles and they're the right ones. And so we work with them in understanding what others are doing and how to continue to push this from a policy side. We work with the groups like the Alliance to Save Energy, which is a group that works with states, in particular in the U.S. They also work in Europe and other countries around energy-related policies that ensure that building codes, building standards that they increase, that the pull is there for energy-related increases, buildings becoming more efficient. And if you're asking for a building to be more efficient, then we believe you have to consider all the energy-using elements of a building, whether it's your home or the office you work in. And since ours are huge energy-consuming portions of a building, we really think that their work at the state and national levels are really important too.
I feel like Scott just keeps, in his answers, just going right into the what we're thinking about asking for the next question, Jay. This is amazing. So you're talking about things in the home, and we read an article late last year that you wrote on how the Internet of Things can help with energy efficiency. So you mentioned that by 2021, nearly 55% of all households, nearly 73 million homes in the U.S. are expected to be smart homes. And one aspect of a smart home is smart thermostats, which can lead to significant energy savings since thermostats account for half of a home's energy use. And since every degree that a homeowner raises their thermostat, they can possibly reduce overall energy costs by about 2 or 3%. So can you tell us about the latest in smart homes and other Internet of Things applications to increase energy efficiency?
Well, that's a great question. And thanks for referencing that article on the Internet of Things. I think some people find that a scary topic. I find it very exciting because I think it's back to that possibilities that I mentioned earlier. I think that the most exciting thing right now is beyond your thermostat. It's the fact that the more things that we connect in the home, the smarter the homeowner can be about how to save money and reduce energy. You know, whether it's an Alexa connected device, whether it's light bulbs that can give you feedback on your phone about when they're on or off and how much energy they consume, what we've learned is that a couple of things. One is the more you can automate things, the better the energy savings. Typically, that's why programmable thermostats are a win for homes. Smart thermostats are even a bigger win, because they can learn the homeowner's activities. They can figure things out just through some installed intelligence. And they know that what time you arrive home, they can begin to understand your patterns, and they can adjust the lighting, the heating, the cooling, really the energy use of your home. I think of it that way, in a way that saves you money as well as reduces your energy footprint, i.e. your impact on the climate. So the more devices, the more things we can connect in a home, the more homeowners have options related to their energy use and reduction, as well as their cost savings. And so it's a win. And I think we have great possibilities that are still untapped.
And is there anything that's not connected now, or that people don't typically think of as being connected, that can really move the needle here? Because thermostats, if you're like, oh, most people heard of that. But is there something that you see as becoming smart that could change the ballgame?
Yeah, I think we have more options around connecting everything. In my home, I have my washer and dryers connected to Alexa. My your refrigerator and ranges can be connected to thermostats, and of course your lighting system. So, you know, this whole concept of smart home, one is more affordable and easier to install and make happen than ever before. And the opportunities in the future, when you go to select new appliances, new energy consuming devices, it's all built in now. So this is not things that are premium anymore. These are things that are very affordable, and they're just smart. It's the right word.
So podcast, Scott, back to your point about our interviewee, Scott, he's taking us in all of the places where we'd like to take the interview. So again, Scott, this is right in line of what you're talking about, but I'd like to open it up maybe a little bit. So as we look into the future, we're talking about potential new tech in our homes, but you know, you're at the nexus of a lot of groundbreaking stuff, from policy developments to really just industry-wide innovations. So is there anything that we haven't touched on related to energy efficiency that really gets you excited about where the industry is going?
There's a couple of things I have to mention. One is, in case your listeners aren't aware, we have reached parity on the cost of energy related to renewable versus others. This is a really big deal. Most Most of your listeners now can install renewable energy sources on their homes, near their homes, maybe from community sources or on-site sources at the same cost level or even better than what they may have been doing historically. This is a big deal. This is what's changing the energy grid. A transition is underway that is going to have meaningful and big impacts for every community, every state in the nation. We're already at the parity piece. The second piece, people have thought where it's not even possible. We're actually seeing communities pop up with this concept of net zero energy homes, net zero energy buildings. What we used to think was impossible, like there's no way you could do that. We're finding that not only is that possible, but we have buildings now that are net positive energy. They're actually putting more energy back on the grid than they're consuming. This was a concept that was so far from our thinking only four or five years ago that now it's, as I mentioned, we have communities that I've visited myself where they're net zero energy homes on every corner. And this is a really big deal. This, along with the first thing that I mentioned, is changing the way we think about energy use and energy supply and
I think that's a great point. And especially, you're referencing these net zero buildings and homes, the fact that it makes financial sense to build them in the first place, because I think there is that misconception that, if we're going to make something net positive or net zero, we're going to have to take a hit to do it. And, as you're seeing this really catch on, it's, maybe that's not so much the case anymore.
Well, you probably still, you don't have to take a hit on the front end and you get a payback over time. I mean, you think even now, like just straight up, it's cheap. It's at the same cost to get a net zero.
Yeah, I think it's reaching parity now. Obviously, some of this would depend on the region of the country or the state that you're in, because our energy prices right now are, they're different from location to location. However, I think we're certainly reaching parity because we're approaching it. The smartest builders are approaching it like a system. So as I mentioned, like this web idea. Maybe you want a more efficient HVAC system, and if you get the most efficient system, then maybe you can shave off how thick your window panes have to be or what the glaze is there, because it nets out to be equal to each other, or vice versa. Maybe you have the most efficient, maybe you gain your efficiencies through windows, and you can relax a bit on the mechanical systems so that you get the same objective. I think the point is that we have more options than ever to achieve much greater things.
So Scott, you've been kind enough to reference our listeners throughout this conversation. So they're involved. They probably want to get more involved. So where can they go to learn more about Ingersoll Rand's energy efficiency efforts? And are there any other resources or new sources that you like that they might want to stay on top of too?
That's a great question. Well, the easiest way would be IngersollRand.com. There's two areas of the site. One's news and the other is through our strengths portal. You touch on strengths, you'll find a whole host of information around sustainability, energy efficiency. You'll also find a way to contact me personally. So I'd love to hear from your listeners.
Okay. And what are, you talk about people analyzing their footprint. Do you have any websites that you that you would direct people to help identify those areas, or that people can just learn more about this stuff generally that you've found is particularly insightful?
Look, there are great websites out there. I think the EPA, the US EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, has some great tools that are underutilized, whether you're thinking about energy efficiency, or your own personal home use around energy, carbon footprint. They have some great, easily understandable calculators and information that would be applicable for any of your listeners. There's great resources there. That'd be the first one I would point people to. There are a host of others. My friend Andrew Winston has a great website, and he talks about everything from policies to what's happening in the world of goals and targets that on the company side, and you can find that at andrewwinston.com. And so there's some great resources out there.
Another guest of ours, Scott. Yeah. I think we're doing pretty well here.
Check out his Twitter too. That's a party over there as well.
All right, Scott. So we have one last question for you, which is a classic question we ask of all of our interviewees. So let's say we did this interview correctly. We're at your family farm. We've got some homemade pies in front of us. We're driving around on golf carts to get around. And mm-hmm. we're looking for a party fact on energy efficiency that we can share with our friends that will just knock their socks off. So do you have, you know, being at the crux of so much cool stuff going on at Ingersoll Rand, what is a party fact that we can take to tell all of our friends about energy efficiency?
A party fact for energy efficiency.
It's full of sustainability geeks, so we're not going to dispel anyone here.
There's all kind of great facts around energy and climate. I think that my interesting party fact right now is more of a global one. So for me, I recently heard that there'll be 2 billion new people that enter the middle class by 2030. That's just 10 years from now. And most of those will enter in developing countries like India, where they do not have access to things like cooling and fresh food. And all of those things consume a lot of energy. It takes a lot of energy to deliver cooling for 2 billion new people. It takes a lot of energy to deliver fresh food like we enjoy it every day. And there, our energy grid currently can't handle another 2 billion having the same access. So we either have to rethink how we cool and provide fresh food, or we have to rethink what else it means when 2 billion new people enter the middle class around the world. I think that there's a lot of upside there. I think that it's going to force some innovations. And I think the fact that all of these people will be expecting some of the things that we all enjoy to be a good thing, but also a challenging thing for us to meet. And it's going to take a lot of innovation.
And you're hopeful that we'll have these sort of innovations, that there will be uptake of it and be able to provide those sorts of things to everybody?
Yeah, I know we can. We do it today. Can we do it in the next 10 years at the same level? That's the question. It's going to require us all to get really serious about delivering that and doing it in a way that's not negatively impactful on the planet. That's the big question. That's what we have to answer. That's the exciting piece.
Create a better spider web.
You got it.
Scott, we are all looking to you singularly to make this happen.
It's all on you, man.
Best of luck to you.
Jay and I are too busy going to movies, you know, in these automatically controlled rooms.
Settings.
You figure it out, man.
All right. You can count on me.
Well, Scott, we want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us and share all of the cool things you are seeing at the Center for Energy Efficiency and Sustainability at Ingersoll Rand. So thanks again for joining us. We think you've got some great insights to share.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks, Scott, so much.
All right, Scott, we've been talking a lot about energy efficiency. Part of that is energy conservation. I think we should conserve some energy and go ahead and power down our mics and conclude this episode.
Well, if only we had more efficient mics, Jay, maybe we wouldn't be so concerned with powering them down. Honestly, we didn't even think about that when we purchased these.
You know what? I sense a market opportunity, Scott. Maybe this is our next new venture.
You get on that, Jay. Get back to me. We want to thank Scrapeg, Round Hole, and Potions that provided the music for the episode.
We also want to thank Shannon Parker and Meenakshi Menon for helping us with our intro notes for this episode, and thank Matt Ahrens, who's been helping us out on social media.
And one place we could actually use some help is with editing. So if people want to learn GarageBand or know GarageBand and want to help us out in making these episodes, please email us, hosts@sustainabilitydefined.com, hosts@sustainabilitydefined.com. We would love to hear from you about wanting to help us out there.
Listeners, you can also help support us on patreon.com/sustainabilitydefined. Donate to score all kinds of cool perks like stickers and exclusive content while helping to keep this awesome endeavor running. And our last ask of you on this episode is, of course, to rate, review, and subscribe to our show on iTunes. Or if you prefer Spotify, we are there too.
And give us feedback at our email address. Again, hosts@sustainabilitydefined.com.
All right. And so last episode, we featured one heck of a review from Little Zeebo. I think we enjoyed that. Let's throw in another review we've had. Scott, why don't you read it off?
Okay, so this one is from Eric Riddle. It's titled Net Impact. It says, as a fellow Net Impact member, I'm encouraged by this podcast. This kind of collaboration and content is a perfect extension of the Net Impact mission. Keep up the great work. Go Hoosiers.
Go Hoosiers. So,
all right, IU connection, Net Impact connection, love it. And listeners, we're reading these because, you know, we want to give you a shout out if you write a good review, but also it really does help us get seen by other people who are searching for sustainability podcasts the more reviews we have. So please take a second to do that. It's just open it up in the podcast app and you can do it in a second.
Love it.
So Jay, I think that about does it. You all stay sustainable out there. I'm Scott Breen.
And I'm Jay Siegel. We will see you next time.